Daniel Cobb, doctor of oriental medicine, and welcome to my radio show, Natural Medicine. I've been a doctor of oriental medicine for 10 years. In my history, I've taken referrals from the Gerson Cancer Institute. I've also taught for the past 4 years at anatomy and physiology at various professional schools around Santa Fe and Albuquerque. Today, I want to continue keeping a focus on heart disease. And for the first couple of segments today, I want to start out with an interview with Dave Leake, who has quite a story to tell about his heart disease. And Dave, are you on the phone?
Yes.
Okay. Well, and I want to leave most of the talking to you. I might interject a reminder or a comment or a question, but I'll just start you off with the idea that this this story probably starts about 14 years ago, somewhere around 1989.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, go ahead.
24 years ago.
Well, excuse me?
Your math is bad. 24 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Okay, you got me on that one.
I had my first angioplasty in 1984. I'd been complaining of chest pains. They did some tests and discovered that the left anterior descending artery, the one they call the widowmaker, was 85% blocked.
Mm-hmm.
So we had an angioplasty done, and it opened it up about 40%, I guess, as I recall.
Yeah, I was looking through your records, and it looks like it said that it reduced the blockage down to about 30%. Mm-hmm. No complications. Looked like it was a pretty smooth event.
It was. It was. But that's when I started on statin drugs.
Uh-huh.
And would be on them for 17 years. But I went through every statin drug and had adverse reactions at some point in time with each one. Gradually, it would start off with a pain in my side, and it would become more severe, anywhere from a year to a year and a half. And I would complain about it, and the doctor would say, oh, the statins can't do that, but let's take you off the drug and see what happens. Well, I'd get off the drug, the pain would go away. And lucky for me, at that point, they had just come up with another new statin.
Uh-huh.
And so we'd start around again.
And what was the, you know, did the doctor come up with an explanation as to, you know, when it became sort of clear that maybe that pain was from the statin, did they come up with an explanation of how it would have occurred?
No, okay. Never did. But my last statin was Lipitor.
Uh-huh.
And I was on that for about 2 years and thought I was finally found a statin that I could live with. And then one night I was talking with cousin who worked in nursing homes, and I complained that my hips were hurting quite badly, and her first question to me was, are you on Lipitor? So I went off to see my new heart doctor that I had at that point, and he said, well, I can't picture that the Lipitor would be causing that, but let's take you off the Lipitor and see what happens.
Uh-huh.
The next thing that happened was, for about a period of 6 weeks, I had excruciating pain in my legs. It was like a withdrawal symptom.
Wow.
Pain so severe that one day I was at a Home Depot, and I used a shopping cart to get myself in from the parking lot to make my purchase, and I was in the back of the store, and the pain became so intense I didn't know if I was going to make it back to the car. So that went on for about 6 weeks, as I say. Faded away. I've never had those pains again. But I've been told that couldn't be caused by Lipitor.
but on the other hand, to the credit of your was it your relative?
Mm-hmm.
You know, in her opinion, it could have been caused by Lipitor.
She had seen similar symptoms among nursing home patients. Yes.
Uh huh.
And so that was the basis of her question to me. But at that point, I kind of got a death sentence from my heart doctor, and he looked at me squarely and said, there's nothing more I can do for you. Meaning, I'd been through all of the statins, and at that moment in time, there was not another new one just coming on the market that they could switch me to.
Uh-huh.
They said, there's nothing more I can do for you. Well, I panicked because every member of my family, except for two, going back three generations, died from coronary artery disease.
And, wow. that sounds like a scary history.
It does. My grandfather, who I never met, died a year before I was born at age 56. Doctor told him he had fat around the heart and he should get out and exercise. So he went for a jog, came back home, and dropped dead. And so that was a story that I grew up with. And you can imagine my mind process when I was told, there's nothing more I can do for you.
Uh-huh.
And so I went out online.
But just to sort of mark this moment in time here, that could have been the best thing that ever happened to you in the whole history of your heart disease.
Yes, it turned out that it was. It was a fortuitous event, causing me to begin looking into other alternatives. And surprisingly, I came across a 1994 U.S. patent, and it's number 5278189, if anybody wants to look it up, or they can go to my website, worldwithoutheartdisease.com.
Worldwithoutheartdisease.com.
Yes.
And you could probably also Google Dave Leak, L-E-A-K-E.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
And I was looking through the websites, and I came across Owen Fonero's site, whom you know.
Yes, yes.
And Owen had written this piece about the patent, and Linus Pauling and Dr. Rath from Germany, who secured this patent. Excuse me. And so I started looking into it, read the whole patent, and then decided, well, I've got nothing to lose. I will begin the protocol that they describe.
Because they pretty much assigned you to be your own doctor at that point.
That's about what happened.
Yeah.
Luckily, the heart doctor that I was working with had an open mind to this, though. And
uh-huh.
So we were in agreement that I would try this, and he would monitor my health, do stress tests and things along the way to make sure I was okay.
I'd like to give him a few good points for that, because I've actually heard of people, engineering their heart disease care, and keeping things secret from their doctor so they wouldn't lose them.
I don't recommend that.
Yeah.
in my book, I say, if you've got a doctor that doesn't agree with this, go look for another doctor.
Yeah.
But don't be your own doctor.
Yeah. Okay.
And so I was fortunate in that regard. And he read some of the books that I gave him and kept an open mind, and we stayed in contact. And so I felt I was in good hands in that regard. And went along that way from 2007 until July of 2011. And I live in Florida, and it gets pretty hot here. I'd been working out in the yard, and I don't know, apparently I developed a case of Florida heat stroke.
Mm-hmm.
But we did a stress thallium test, and it came back inconclusive, and my heart doctor decided that's not good enough. I want to go in and find out what's going on, so he sent me over to the hospital for an invasive angiogram procedure.
Like a catheterization?
Yes.
Okay.
And so I was lying on the gurney while the procedure was going on. And, of course, you're awake for that because they want you to be able to turn or do whatever
mm-hmm.
as they move this thing into your heart. And the nurse leaned over my gurney at one point and said, I hope my arteries are as clean right now as yours. And I went, whoa.
This was after what time frame? How many months or years had you been following the advice that you found online?
I found it in late 2007, so almost 4 years.
Uh-huh, okay.
I'd been feeling really good, you know, but I had no clue that my heart was that much improved until we had this procedure done. And luckily I had presence of mind to ask the tech who was running the equipment if he could make prints of the x-rays.
Mm-hmm.
And so those prints now are on the cover of my book.
Uh-huh.
And on the website.
Just in case there's any doubters in the technical staff there.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's why I posted my medical record online too, as you've seen.
Uh-huh.
So that anybody can go there and follow the progress of that. But it was about 4 years into the Pauling and Rath protocol when this occurred.
Dave, what I want to do is we're going to go to a break here.
Yep.
So we'll cut out for a little bit, and then we'll come back very shortly. Welcome back to, this is Daniel Cobb, Doctor of Oriental Medicine. Welcome back to my show, Natural Medicine. And we're continuing on with an interview with Dave Leake, who is a heart disease patient with a very interesting story from Bradenton, Florida. He's on the phone with us right now. And Dave, let's continue with that story.
Okay. The upshot of all of that was, I wrote the book, A Patented Heart Disease Cure That Works,
mm-hmm.
Which we published on July 4 last year, kind of as an in-your-eye to the pharmaceutical industry, my declaration of independence, and then recently developed the website, worldwithoutheartdisease.com, and I tell my story in a video there, and provide links to my medical record and to links to the other people who have educated me about this, including Owen Fonero, who I mentioned earlier, and Dr. Dwayne Gravelin, MD, also known as Space Doc. He's a retired NASA astronaut and medical researcher. So there's some heavyweights on the site who kind of back up what I'm saying, particularly about the damage statin drugs can cause.
Uh-huh.
And so that's about the whole thing. As I say, I was on the protocol for about 4 years before we had this angioplasty done.
Right.
And by the way, the official result of the angioplasty, the doctor's report was that I had no obstructive disease.
Mm-hmm. Now, what I want to do is just have you comment on the name of your website. I mean,
a
World Without Heart Disease, okay?
Worldwithoutheartdisease.com.
.com, okay. Now, that seems to indicate that according to what you've read and verified by your own personal experience, that you seem to think that this could be a world without heart disease.
Mm-hmm.
So if they would just take notice, if the first thing, even in not only when people get heart disease, but in a preventive way, when they're 20, 25, if they were aware of what you have found out the hard way.
Gee, you just led me into my new book
okay.
that I'm working on.
Oh, well, tell us about it.
It's in a very rough form at this point. The working title on it is Protect Your Heart from Heart Disease.
Uh-huh.
I find that here quickly on my list.
So whereas your experience is fix your heart after it's been damaged.
Right.
The best way to do this is to prevent it from ever happening in the first place.
Well, I wrote my book, I have to admit, in anger.
Uh-huh.
I was angry with the pharmaceutical industry. I was angry with the medical community who have known about this patent since 1994 and done everything to prevent the widespread use of it.
And I'll confirm that I've read extensively on the topic of heart disease, And I've never encountered that except as references provided by the Vitamin C Foundation and O1 Funeral.
Yes, exactly.
So it seems to be, in many respects, a well-kept secret.
Well, when Pauling and Rath announced their initial findings in 1992.
And let's confirm for the viewers that Linus Pauling, the PhD, the Nobel Prize-winning PhD, and Matthias Rath, an MD, less known, but if you follow his history, he has a rather spectacular career in preventive medicine.
Yes. They held a news conference in 1992 to announce their findings and immediately were attacked as quacks and charlatans by the pharmaceutical industry and by leaders in the medical industries, medical community as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
And this was in
1992.
So,
right. So that led them to go ahead and get a patent in 1994 to protect the information and to make it public so that it wouldn't be, nobody could buy it and hide it or whatever.
Right.
And so.
And they made their patent. Did they make their patent available to the public at no charge?
Yes.
Right.
It's available.
Okay.
So you can go online and find it.
Right. So that one of the reasons to do this, to get this patent, is so that nobody else could get this patent.
Yes.
And then not make it available to the public.
Yeah. I believe that's the case.
Yeah.
And the other side of it is the reason that the pharmaceutical industry didn't embrace it is because these are natural vitamins and minerals. It's not... any kind of a patentable synthetic drug that they can then make money on.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a heck of a lot of money to be made creating vitamin C.
Right.
Compared to Lipitor, for instance.
Oh, right, right. Vitamin C, you know, a couple pennies per dose is what it costs to manufacture.
Yeah.
You probably pay more than that after there's a few markups along the way, but still, it's a pretty low price.
It is.
Compared to the prescription drugs.
Exactly.
And you might want to just quickly go through some of the prime vitamins and minerals that you are currently taking.
I don't have that list in front of me.
Oh, okay.
I didn't bring it along.
Okay.
But the main ingredients, I'll tell you, for the patent are... massive doses of vitamin C, and Pauling described it as vitamin C to bowel tolerance. I didn't want to go quite that far, but I started at 10 grams of vitamin C a day, and I'm pretty much back to that now. I dropped down to 6 grams, as I say in the book, but, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, so
right.
I've gone up.
And if that ounce of prevention is really cheap,
yes,
there's another reason to push it to its as far as you can.
Yes. And then the next one is L-lysine, which is available at pharmacies and drugstores.
And health food stores.
And health food stores, and L-proline. And those are the three.
Uh-huh.
The vitamin C, according to Pauling, strengthens the arteries in the heart. But then you're left with these plaques that have been built up, which we've been told are LDL. And, this whole focus is on lowering your LDL and increasing your HDL and all that baloney.
And the difference
turns out,
and the difference between good and bad cholesterol.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. But it turns out Rath's contribution to this thing was his research into what actually makes up the content of those plaques. And lo and behold, the main culprit is something called LP a, which is a different form of lipoprotein that the body uses as a blowout patch to repair damage that's been done to weakened heart arteries.
Uh-huh.
And so you get this LPA that is floating in the bloodstream that runs in to plug up those damaged areas, and then it attracts the LDL to it to form like a scab or a plaque inside mm-hmm. that artery.
Right.
And the plaque can continue to build to a point where you can end up with a heart attack. But what happens when the vitamin C heals the artery is that you're left with this plaque in place, and the L-lysine and L-proline bond with the material in the plaque and gradually draw it away to your liver to flush your arteries clean.
Yeah.
And so that's what happened to me, and that's why the nurse was able to lean over my gurney and say, I hope my arteries are as clean right now as yours.
Yeah. And when the so the L-lysine and the L-proline, you know, I like to describe that, you know, in a microscopic way, what they're sort of competing for the attachment sites. They're
yes.
you know, picking out little pieces of that plaque deposit,
mm-hmm.
very small pieces that are not dangerous, that would not cause
right.
an embolism.
Exactly. I'm sorry.
And so that's on a microscopic level, that's what's happening. But if you could watch a plaque deposit disappear under this therapy in sort of time-lapse photography, you'd think back that, you know, you're watching The Wizard of Oz, and you'd say, it's the plaque deposit is melting.
Yes. It's a gentle erosion
right.
of the plaque deposit.
But a very safe
one. No hazard of a clot forming as the thing breaks
right.
off.
Right.
So that was the point of that.
Dave, what I want to do is we're going to go to a break here.
Yep.
So we'll cut out for a little bit, and then we'll come back very shortly. Dr. of Oriental Medicine, here on the radio show Natural Medicine. We're back with Dave Leake.
Going back to this prevention issue, my concern is trying to get younger people to even listen.
Mm-hmm.
At younger ages, they consider themselves pretty much bulletproof. And so on the cover of my book, I'm listing young people or healthy, athletic people who have succumbed to coronary artery disease.
Mm-hmm.
And right at the top is Jim Fix. He was the founding father of the American fitness revolution.
Uh-huh.
And he thought he could outrun heart disease.
Right. He was the big runner, had the running
yeah.
book.
Died of a heart attack at age 52.
Uh-huh.
One coronary artery was blocked 95%, the second was 85%, and the third was 70% blocked.
Mm-hmm.
And here's a guy who had lean body mass, strong guy, you know, long-distance runner,
mm-hmm.
Dead at 52.
So all the other, and he probably didn't smoke.
Right.
And so all the other factors were leading away from coronary artery disease.
Yes.
But yet it's
same
still
thing with Andy Irons, the surfing legend, who died of a massive heart attack at age 32 in 2010.
Mm-hmm.
And the list goes on. Brittany Murphy, the actress, dead of a heart attack at age 32.
Mm-hmm.
Andy Hallett, who starred as Lorne on the TV series Angel, died at age 33.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then I've got a list of bodybuilders, including Sage Stallone at age 36, and it goes on, and celebrities like Jerry Garcia at 34,
mm-hmm.
John Candy at 43. You know, so I'm building this list. It's not complete yet of all of these younger, healthy, athletic people.
Yeah.
And I'm putting that on the cover of the book as a way of drawing attention and maybe making young people at least pick
yeah.
up.
Yeah, I'm remembering the tennis player Arthur Ashe. I think he had a heart attack
yes.
in his 20s.
Yeah, his first one, yeah. Yeah. And so it's, you know, if people want to talk about diet and overweight and all this stuff, no, that's not the case. half of people who die from coronary artery disease have cholesterol levels below the levels that considered safe.
So, in other words, they're in
cholesterol.
Shouldn't, if the conventional model were accurate, they should be completely in the clear.
Yes.
If they weren't overweight, they had low cholesterol, they didn't smoke, they exercised, they should be in the clear. But yet, time and time again, people in that category have, you know, significant blockages in the coronary arteries or die of a heart attack.
Exactly. And I don't know whether you've come across him or not, Malcolm Kendrick, the English medical doctor.
I think I saw his name on your webpage, but I didn't dig into that one yet.
If you click on his video on my webpage, it's a 3-minute video on cholesterol and heart disease. He did something pretty interesting. He looked at two studies done by the World Health Organization. One was done in several countries over decades, looking at the average cholesterol levels in the blood of populations. The second study, in a couple dozen countries, looked at death rates from coronary artery disease. Luckily, 15 of the countries overlapped. And so what Kendrick did is he created a line graph of the first one being the death rates from coronary artery disease, the second being average cholesterol levels in the bloodstreams of people in these countries. What it turned out is no match between the cholesterol levels and coronary artery disease.
Well, would you even say that it was an opposite correlation?
Pretty much so.
Yeah.
The Australian Aborigines have the highest death rates in the world from coronary artery disease and the lowest rate of cholesterol levels. And then if you go to the other end of his graph, the Swiss have the highest cholesterol levels and among the lowest death rates from coronary artery disease.
Okay. So if you're going to pull a correlation out of that, you'd say, please, please, let me have more cholesterol.
Yeah, yeah. And it turns out that we need cholesterol, and the seniors need it more than anybody else. But cholesterol is critical to various parts of your body, not just your heart. The brain uses cholesterol, and there are some cells in the brain called glial cells, G-L-I-A-L, that scientists didn't understand for a long time. And then in 2001, they were doing some research with glial cells and cholesterol. And when they put the two together in a petri dish, the glial cells created synapses. And so they suddenly discovered, well, these cells aren't lazy or doing nothing. These glial cells use cholesterol to create the pathways in your brain that help you to think and remember. And I can honestly tell you, one of the side effects that I still suffer from all the years on statin drugs is memory loss problems. Dr. Gravelin, who I mentioned earlier, has a book called Lipitor, Thief of Memory.
Right. Which
and,
is to say that your experience is not unusual.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So everything points to cholesterol not being the culprit that we've been made to believe it is. It's probably the biggest lie in the history of mankind. But it's a big money maker.
And maybe the most expensive.
Yes. Yeah. It's a huge money maker for the pharmaceutical industries. And part of the research that I've been doing on my book, the new book I'm working on, is the penalties the pharmaceutical industry has been willing to pay to mislead doctors and the public. GlaxoSmithKline, it's unbelievable, last July of 2012, paid the U.S. government a fine of $3 billion, that's with a B, to to resolve civil and criminal liabilities regarding promotion of his drugs.
So they were just out there lying to the public.
Yeah.
And they got caught. But for them, $3 billion is just part of the cost of doing business.
It was 11% of the profits from last year.
Okay, so it's about a little better than 1 month's profits.
Yeah.
Okay.
But did you hear that? Civil and criminal liabilities.
Yeah.
And so nobody went to jail. They just paid this hefty $3 billion fine. Uh-huh. But they're not alone. Pfizer paid $2.3 billion in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
What else have I got here? Abbott Labs paid $1.5 billion in May of 2012. Eli Lilly paid $1.42 billion in January of 2009. I mean, it's an amazing list.
And just to be clear about the magnitude of this money, is that amount of fine, that amount of fines, hasn't convinced any of them to get out of the statin business.
Or to change their ways.
No.
Okay. No.
Well, I mean, that may remain to be seen in some cases.
Well,
but there's no evidence to indicate that they've cleaned up their approach to drugs.
Yeah, and worse yet, there was a ruling in the Federal Appeals Court of New York last year where the judges overturned the conviction of a sales representative who had been found guilty of selling a drug approved only for narcolepsy and selling it as a treatment for insomnia, fibromyalgia, and other conditions. And they overturned his penalty on the grounds that such marketing represented a constitutionally protected form of free speech.
So telling lies, making statements you know to be false, is now, according to some judge
federal,
and some jury,
appeals
protected
court in New York.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So if this gets to the Supreme Court, there's no telling which way it will end up. But the snake oil salesman may be making a comeback under the guise of free speech. It infuriates me no end. Knowing what I know now about my own condition and having learned so much about the pharmaceutical industry in this process, that they can't be trusted. And, when you come up with a cure that doesn't require expensive drugs, there's no doubt they're going to try to prevent it from the public from finding out about it.
Uh-huh.
And that's apparently what's happened over the years with the Pauling and Rath patent.
Mm-hmm. Dave, we're going to go to another break, and we'll pick you up at the end of that break again. Welcome back. I'm Daniel Cobb, Doctor of Oriental Medicine, here on the radio show Natural Medicine. We're back with Dave Leake. And Dave, one more time for anyone listening in, your webpage.
It's aworldwithoutheartdisease.com.
aworldwithoutheartdisease.com.
Yes.
Okay. And so let's continue on with the, we were talking about some of the financial aspects and potential for market abuse in statin drugs.
Mm-hmm.
But, go ahead.
Well, as I said, my experience has been that they will tell you anything in order to get you to use the drugs. But if you pay attention at the very end of the commercials,
uh-huh,
the disclaimers.
Right, right.
That soothing voice that's kind of down tempo,
right.
And they go
after they
through,
show you the smiling faces and the playing, everybody
exactly
having a great
right.
time.
Exactly.
Then they tell you, but they don't show you. They tell you what all the bad things that could happen.
Yes.
And some of those things are pretty scary. I mean, they...
Well, one of the things they say is it could cause muscle pain or, worse to that effect, muscle damage. There's a name for that. It's called rhabdomyolysis.
Mm-hmm.
And what that is the breaking down of muscle fibers and creating chemicals that attack the kidneys and the liver.
Right. So what really happens is and one of the target tissues, one of the problems with statin drugs is that they cause muscle problems. And and it's just sort of anywhere from an annoyance to a, you know, some degree of a problem until we get to muscle degeneration.
Death, as they say, at the very bottom of their statement.
Yeah. But when you get to muscle degeneration, then you've got this destroyed tissue, which is, you know, has a lot of protein in it, and your kidneys don't like to be processing protein. And that's really the source of the kidney problems. And one of the things that I believe is on the inserts for all the statin drugs now is kidney failure. So we're not talking about some, you know, some irritation of the kidney. We can be talking about kidneys that cease to function.
Yes.
And this wouldn't happen to everyone, not by any means, but it would happen to people that have, that do get the muscle degeneration and also have less than optimally functioning kidneys. And of course, you know, there's more than you might think because, you know, the kidneys that are in perfect shape are in the younger people. By the time you get to be of the age where you might get some degree of heart disease, you probably also have kidneys that aren't quite working as well as they were when you were 20 and 30.
Sure.
So it's sort of a setup for, you know, for the potential for kidney failure.
Yep.
And so, you know, when they tell you that, you know, muscle aches and pains could be signs of a serious problem, they're not joking in the least.
No, no. But that doesn't seem to prevent them from continuing on this. Well, the same thing with CoQ10. Unfortunately, the same method that blocks the cholesterol from going through your system blocks CoQ10 production. And if a doctor has you on one of the statin drugs and doesn't have you on CoQ10, he's setting you up for some big problems there, too, because CoQ10 is the energy source for every cell in your body.
But most significantly in the heart, because CoQ10 is an enabler of the use of high levels of energy. So because the heart has to keep pumping all the time, and especially in the case of a person with some kind of occlusive heart disease, where the tendency is also to have higher blood pressure, then the heart has to work even more, even harder, and thus needs even more coenzyme Q10 when it's being prevented from having even the normal amount that would be created.
Yes. In fact, the pharmaceutical researchers are trying to find a way to change, it's called the malevolent pathway that both processes CoQ10 and cholesterol, cholesterol, and they're trying to find a way to move further down the stream so that they don't block the CoQ10. And then, of course, they can come out with a whole brand new string of pharmaceuticals to treat your condition. But it will still leave you with the shortage of cholesterol in your system that you really need. And the biggest thing, biggest takeaway, I guess, from all of this is that cholesterol is not your enemy, it's your friend. Your body needs it.
Right.
And this whole focus on doing away with cholesterol began with a little study in South Africa back in the 50s where these researchers force-fed cholesterol to rabbits who didn't need any more cholesterol, and they make their own vitamin C to protect their hearts. But they were overloaded with vitamin C, with cholesterol, and several of the rabbits died. And out of that came this whole big industry. If a rabbit died of cholesterol overload, then you know you're susceptible to death from cholesterol, and started mm-hmm. this whole trend. But the takeaway is cholesterol is not the culprit.
Yeah. Well, when I am teaching anatomy and physiology, one of the things that I want to make sure that, you know, 10 years from now, when any of my students gets waken up in the middle of the night, 3 o'clock in the morning, that before they can even see straight, they have to be able to answer a question about cholesterol. You know, is cholesterol a bad thing? And they have to be able to tell me, you know, I'm joking when I say this, of course, but I actually say this in class. I want you to be able to know, you know, before you can even see straight, when you get waken up in the middle of the night, that cholesterol is a wonderful molecule. And if you had any opinion about cholesterol, it probably should be, I want more.
Yeah. But it turns out it's a closed-loop system, too. Your liver produces the HDL,
right,
which carries nutrients to every cell in your body, and the LDL carries waste products created by those cells back to the liver to be processed. And anything more than that, it's, you know, the balance between the two is whatever your body needs at the moment.
Mm-hmm. And your liver, you know, people talk about eating foods that have a lot of cholesterol, really, in very few cases do people actually create, you know, eat, you know, get all their cholesterol from what they eat.
For the, no.
Your liver produces whatever cholesterol that you need, mm-hmm. that your body didn't normally, you know, that you didn't get from your diet. So in almost every case, your body, your liver is producing an additional amount of cholesterol just to top off the levels.
Even some of your cells, some of your brain cells produce cholesterol.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they stop monkeying with your cholesterol levels, they're actually affecting a large part of your body.
Mm-hmm. In fact, because they're required for the cell membranes, for every cell in your body, the potential range of problems with cholesterol reduction extends to every cell in your body.
Mm-hmm. Well, now you're getting down into the level where Linus Pauling worked, which was in the individual cells. And his theory was that if you can keep the cells healthy, the body will be healthy. And, of course, part of that was the collagen that your cells need creates the connectivity between your cells.
Dave, I think we're just about at the end of the show here.
Oh, okay.
So I'm going to have to break off and say, you know, thank the viewers for listeners for tuning in to Natural Medicine. I'm Daniel Kopp, Dr. of Oriental Medicine. And in case you want to contact Dave, you know, you can, what was that one more time, that webpage?
aworldwithoutheartdisease.com.
And my phone number at my clinic, 424-9527. And I think that'll be the end of the show, Dave. Okay. Sure. Thanks for coming on, Dave.
You're quite welcome. Thank you for having me.